from WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. This is the Chancellor's Report, featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Here's your host, Dave Edwards.
Chancellor, welcome back to the program. Always good to have you on WUWM.
It's a pleasure to be here, Dave. Thank you.
I was watching a TV show recently on PBS. It was the Making of Milwaukee series, which they just updated on Channel 10. And I was intrigued by the fact that, and of course we know this, that when Milwaukee got started, it was very much based on a manufacturing community. But one of the things that the series sort of evolved to was how the community has changed. And now the information age economy is taking a greater role, and that's good news for a chancellor of a major university, I would think, because as a knowledge-driven economy, that has to be good news for the university. But yet, oftentimes, the university is criticized for not being grounded in reality. Where's the balance there?
Yeah, there's a lot of different competing forces, aren't there? You know, we have, you're absolutely right, much more knowledge-based society. There's no question that as technology has changed, as organizations have changed, and the Milwaukee economy and, frankly, the larger economy has changed, we have moved in so many ways away from what right after World War II, what the role of higher education meant to society. And we've seen continued transformation. One of the most important issues, I think, facing higher education today is how do we continue to be relevant, add value? How do we continue to fulfill the needs of society at the same time? What is society expecting and willing to fund? Mm-hmm. We've seen dramatic shifts, demographic, technological, budgetary, societal expectations and roles, what's happening globally. And I think we have to look and really adapt and proactively engage in asking these questions internally, as well as making sure that the community embraces those. So those are some big questions that we're dealing with, and they're not unique to UW-Milwaukee. They're really facing higher education across the country. Jonas Priesing not only wrote a paper, which is available on the web, but he presented the findings to the Greater Milwaukee Committee, talking about how kids in entering school today, kindergartners, preschoolers, by the time they graduate from college or get to that age, a college graduation, two-thirds of the jobs that will be available haven't even been invented yet. Mm. We really need to be thinking about how we adapt and how we become continuously learning as individuals, because if we're just looking at prepping for a single job today, it's not likely to be around for very long.
Yeah, I suppose there is a danger to that. Historically, higher education, really all of education, was seen as a public good. But as we record this, the presidential political season and all the other races down the ballot, there are a lot of people who are questioning whether or not really higher education is the wise investment. There seems to have been a very basic change in the way people view things.
And I think you're raising the current election issues that show two very different views of that question, and I'll sidestep that because we'll know more about the election soon enough,
right.
and where really the electorate sees that going. But I will say that societally across the last at least 15, if not more years, we have seen a substantial shift in higher education as a public good and funded as such, compared to today, where I think it's much more become an individual benefit, meaning that we have in this state about 83 to 84% of our budget is not supported by the state. In other words, flipping it around, about 16 to 17% of our UW system budget is state or public taxpayer supported. The rest comes from federal loans, grants, student tuition, and other private and non-state supported funds. So that is a substantial change, and that's been the case nationally. That's not unique to Wisconsin. And there's books, articles. I mean, this is well documented. So that puts more burden, of course, on students, which is what drives the escalating tuition and student debt that we have today. Mm-hmm. And so these are some of the most important and profound questions, I think, facing the country because of the implications for the workforce, because of the implications for what does it mean to have more college education. And so those are some thoughts offhand on that.
So if before World War II, fewer than 20% of high school students went to college, we saw that change over time where, students in high school were pretty much advised, you've got to go to college. And as costs go up and concern goes up about how much the state will support education versus how much tuition will be and how much fundraising there has to be, are you concerned that there won't – that college education will not be as valued and in some way that will skew our country's ability to respond to the changes of the global economy?
I think there's the question of values, and then I think there's also the question of pragmatics. And to be very blunt, I think it's very hard for as many people to afford college today as historically there had been, absent more financial aid, absent colleges really being able to address this. And frankly, us looking at this saying, can government help more in terms of different support? And whether it's federal or state or other government and ultimately business, I think from a student perspective, the value has to be looked at one level economically, recognizing that a college degree today continues, and this has been the case for the last four decades, college degrees continue to be your best investment for long-term earnings. And I'm talking about over a lifetime, more than twice as much earnings as what a high school degree is going to have. Especially in today's world, professional degrees are the surest path to a stable, solid income. So you have both the higher your education, the higher your income in general, and also the lower your unemployment risk. Mm-hmm. And so those factors together, that you're employed more often and that you make more money, that's just a solid, well-established fact. In fact, it's been the differential has been more than 2-1. And the lifetime earnings of a college graduate is $1 million more than if you don't, over in terms of lifetime earning differential.
So that's an amazing number.
It's all these facts are well established. I can share my notes with you. It is pretty remarkable how astounding that is. So you also have other factors that I think we have to look at. Employees with and citizens with education contribute more to their society in terms of taxes that are paid, in terms of civic contributions, volunteerism, a number of different things that correspond with having an education. And part of that is that you have more income and can do more things. You can offer more and can contribute more to so many different things. So that said, I think we have to be sensitive to what kind of education you have and you receive. And that's why I keep coming back to what we pride ourselves on at UW-Milwaukee, which is that well-rounded, critical thinking, foundation that's provided no matter what your degree is, whether it's in engineering, nursing, business, English, the arts. You have a well-grounded education in liberal arts, in humanities. You're exposed to social sciences. You're really able to think through issues. And that's, I think, probably one of the most important parts of this conversation is to think about as society changes, as jobs change, as the world changes, you have to be ready to adapt. And the only way you have that foundation is to be continually learning. And that's what we really help prepare our students for in the future.
You know, when I was starting off into the university world oh so many years ago, there seemed to be more of a push for liberal arts education, and more students of my era majored in history and English and comparative literature. Now there seems to be a greater trend for looking at a college education as really being job training. So, which is why your nursing schools and your other professional schools have done so traditionally well. Am I reading that wrong?
I think there's a huge demand today for exactly what you're talking about: professional degrees, degrees that are truly in the professions, those that have instrumentality, that have a path to careers. That said, we still see today, if you look at the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, if you look at the leaders of so many different types of organizations, you see a lot of people who have philosophy, history, arts, degrees from a variety of different backgrounds. Some of the most prominent attorneys that I work with are all from very solid liberal arts, very solid humanities backgrounds. You know, myself, I look at this. Yes, I've got a business degree, but I started out in English and almost got, you know, enough credits for the English degree. And I look at where I learned how to think. I look at where I learned, you know, the critical perspectives, historic, and those types of things. And I think we'd be shortchanging our students in society if we just focused on this education has to get me that job, most fundamentally, because that job is not likely to be here in 5 or 10 years. If we think about the jobs, and just in we're still one of the areas, we're still one of the strongest states in manufacturing, but look at how many manufacturing jobs this state has lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just profound over time. Look at how our economy has changed. The professional services firms, the healthcare, the financial services, insurance sector, and a number of other IT and knowledge-based types of jobs that are so powerful, so important. And that's an example of how the economy has changed, and our education has to really move along with that.
How do you sustain that sort of, you know, I don't want to call it a dual mission, but that kind of a, you know, sustaining liberal arts, sustaining the professional schools, given the financial times that you're dealing with? I would guess that it's the sciences and it's the business schools that are bringing in most of the money, whereas a history department may not have access to the same money that they're bringing in that some of the other schools are. Does that mean you have to subsidize one over the other? How do you sustain those?
Well, colleges are always a portfolio of some areas that have more income, more student credit hours, more tuition revenue, more grants that do in fact subsidize other parts of the campus. Any college has that, so you're going to have those types of calculus equations always going on. It's complicated, and to your point, you might have some areas that today are very popular and growing in terms of student demand and therefore tuition revenues. On the other hand, you can have some areas that may not be that popular from a major perspective, may not be ever a lot of growth or jobs, but those areas may be bringing in a lot of grants and a lot of research. At UWM in particular, because we're a Research One university and we have an access mission and we're focused on student success, we have to juggle a lot of really complicated variables. We know that our natural sciences areas are some of the most important, and STEM-related fields are some of the most important for some of the work that's being done for the Research One areas. We've got many areas across letters and science and many areas that are important, but they not may not all be really growing or prominent with students who are going to major in those. So we have to find ways to allocate and be very thoughtful about this. And it's certainly not a top-down decision. It's collaborative with very clear guidance and goals and expectations about we have to maintain our Research One status. We've got to continue to grow in any area where there's growth potential. And at the same time, we've got to continue trimming and leaning out as much as we can. We've reduced our salary overall year over year 10%. We've knocked 20% of our administrative spending out in a little over a year, Dave. I mean, these are just phenomenal changes to address the budget cuts. But we're doing, by a lot of different metrics and by a lot of the quantitative measures, we're doing well in many areas. That said, every cut hurts, and every person that we don't have is that much less impact we can have in terms of the real balance that we strive for is to continue to fill the talent pipeline. So we graduated 5,300 students on average over the last 5 years. We put over 20,000 employees into this labor market in the last 4 years alone. That's substantial, and that enhances economic growth. But beyond the pipeline, beyond the talent pipeline, it's the research partnerships. So the types of endeavors that we have with the GE Medical, with work that we're now embarking on with Direct Supply, the types of things that we have with longstanding Johnson Controls and Rockwell and so many different organizations to bring research knowledge around things from from like human psychology aspects of development, you know, leadership development, to very, very different scientific applications in energy storage and scanning equipment and magnetic resonance imaging, all that type of work that strengthens the economy.
So how do you do this balancing act while still thinking about the future? If, in fact, so many of those future jobs that people are going to have don't exist now, how do you build in that kind of, I don't know, future think to so that by the time students get here, they'll be able to have the training they will need for those new jobs?
Part of it, I believe, is having our students participate, continuing to participate on a greater number of projects than ever before with respect to our faculty research, getting close to internships, doing things that are exposing them to the challenges and things that are happening in the world around us, independent of what the major is. I also continue to maintain that the best preparation for the changing future is a well-grounded education that exposes you to a number of different things and forces you to critically think, to be able to evaluate, to be able to understand where we come from, where we're going, not just have a focus on a professional vocational approach. There's important roles for that, but I do think that as we look across all our student areas, majors and focus, that the entrepreneurial mindset that our campus is adopting increasingly is going to be a big part of that. Mm-hmm. So that whether you're in College of Health Science, Business Engineering, Arts, or any field whatsoever, whether it's in the sciences, technology, engineering, mathematics, and so forth, you're able to contribute in so many more ways and be thinking about how do I add value? How do I think innovatively, creatively, and help solve problems that the world has? And if you have that mindset, if you have that type of training, I think you're well positioned to go anywhere in life.
Mm-hmm. Mark Mone, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, is our guest in conversation. You were talking about how many of newly minted graduates you've put into the workforce over the last several years. The truth is you tell these stories, but you have really a lot of very successful alumni. And I'm always intrigued by the fact, and I don't know exactly why or if this is rare, but so many of our alumni really stay in the state.
We're rare that way, Dave. We've got about 3/4 of our 178,000 alumni that stay right here in Wisconsin. It's pretty phenomenal to have those numbers. And, you know, it's powerful not just because of the way that our alumni become prominent, what they do. You know, when I go to Seattle and I visit Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, who is our computer science graduate, or I go virtually to any city and there's so many prominent leaders, you know, the Golda Meir from UWM, who graduated in 1948, who went on to become the Prime Minister of Israel, and individuals truly around the world, prime ministers, presidents of countries, of leading organizations in the community. If you think through the largest firms, the most successful, how many of our alumni have gone to those? On the comedian side, Frank Caliendo, he's a Panther. I think about
one of my favorites. He's hilarious. Does he do an imitation of you yet? That's what I want to know.
that would be fun. I'd like to see that. But you know, aside from you know, there's the sheer numbers. The stories are neat, and we had this wonderful alumni celebration earlier in October, and we really put the spotlight on, like we do every year, 20 to 25 individuals, and we were focusing on 22 that night. And I'd just like to share just a few anecdotes, just a few examples, if I may. It was a remarkable night, and Dr. Michael McCray, he's a professor of neurosurgery and neurology at the Medical College of Wisconsin, and he's also the director of brain injury research there. He's worked extensively with athletes. He's done some work in the military with some veteran groups on PTSD, but especially on concussions, and he's worked with the Green Bay Packers. And he really looks at this protocol for assessing head injuries and concussions. And the NFL, NCAA, and high schools throughout this country have changed their protocols based on his work. Mm. So he received a Lifetime Achievement Award, and it was just such an honor to have him share his comments and talk with such humility about how it all started at UWM. I really think it started with his family and his upbringing, but he gave us so much credit. Mm-hmm. And then you have Dennis Coy. And Dennis is, he's the president and CEO of the Milwaukee Public Museum. And he grew up in Whitefish Bay, and he remembers when he was young going to the museum, streets of old Milwaukee.
Sure.
And he said he didn't like school that much, but he loved the museum. And then he went on, as a Panther, he learned about exhibit design, and he did things at the Smithsonian in D.C., at the Smithsonian, at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and at other institutions. And then he leaped to become our museum director in Milwaukee. And that's pretty rare in the museum world. And then he returned here to lead that place that helped shape his future.
Yeah.
And so he was wonderful to recognize. And a third example of the power and the impact of our alumni that came from that night is from Kimberly Motley. And Kimberly, I've met before. She's prominent. There's Motley's Law, which was a film that was featured in the film festival recently here in Milwaukee. And that's about Kimberly. She's a lawyer, international lawyer, and litigator. And she's a CEO of Motley Consulting. And it's an international firm. And she is the only American lawyer who's licensed to practice law in Afghanistan. And the women in particular that she's represented, men too, but the women who have no alternatives in many Muslim countries are so appreciative of the work that she's been able to represent and provide. So this Motley's Law film was this documentary that I encourage everybody to take a look at. So these are just a few examples of some pretty powerful stories of the impact of UWM.
She was she visited us here at WUWM, mm-hmm. and I was just captivated by her story. And clearly, I mean, it's just amazing what she does every day. And to think it started at UWM.
It's really neat. It is absolutely so neat to have her as an alum. And we hope to be able to have her come in May. To do her commencement speaking at one of our graduation ceremonies in 2017. So I'll keep my fingers crossed that we can work through that.
That'd be great. We are in the season when people start thinking about college sports. And first and foremost, congratulations on a very big gift to support athletics.
It was our biggest ever, Dave. Thank you very much. $1 million from Fred Sitzberger, who is such a dear friend. He's been a longtime supporter of scholarships and our work in the Lubar School. He's a graduate in accounting of the Lubar School. But for him to give an unrestricted gift of $1 million, it just blew us away.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled with that.
And that couldn't come at a better time, given the constraints and quite frankly, some of the concerns about the athletic department that we just talked about 6 months to a year ago.
Yeah, you're right. It seems like a long time ago. I like to maybe put that back. But you're right. In March and April, there were some significant transitions. We couldn't be happier with Coach Laval Jordan. And I have to mention, you know, there's a lot of spotlight on the men's basketball team right now in a lot of different ways. We can chat about that, but I have to tell you, I'm also extremely proud of our women's basketball team. Coach Kyle Recklitz has done such a marvelous job. They came in second last year in the Women's Horizon League, and they're a tough team, and they're just scrappy, and I'm so proud of them. But our men this year, I think what they make up, what they don't have in height, they're going to make up for and really go get them. Aggressive playing. They're poised. I think that we are definitely in a rejuvenation period, as Coach Val likes to say.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look forward to seeing some excitement on the court. And I encourage everybody to come watch with us down at the Panther Arena.
Yeah, and the Horizon League is getting more and more competitive. People are really paying attention. I mean, you know, 10, 20 years ago, nobody paid attention to the Horizon League, but there's some real competition there now.
There is, and we're delighted to have the Admirals now joining us in the Panther Arena. So
yeah.
The embellishments, the additions, the changes that we've made, they just continue to grow. So that's a great place. It's the best place in the state to watch a basketball
game. It's an incredible venue.
Yeah.
I just love going in there because not only of the memories it has for me as a young child watching, you know, sporting events in there, but it's just the sight lines are great. You feel like you're part of it. So
yeah.
That's an exciting place to see basketball or hockey.
I can take your ticket order now.
Yeah. take an order. Wait a minute. We always like to talk a little bit on the show about some of the things that you're involved in, a segment we call the coolest things the chancellor does. Maybe that's our way of saying you do some things other than budgets and other things. But what are some of the other things you've been involved in this month?
Yeah. I love this job. There's so many great things to it. There's some tough things. But, you know, the things that are valuable is bringing the stories to life, sharing the great impact that we have, profiling faculty and things like that. But there's also opportunities to engage with the community, bring our alumni to different events. And, you know, tonight I'm going to be doing a foodie fest. We can talk about that more after this. But that's with the wonderful Indian chef, Alamelu Viravan. And we've got some alumni that we're gathering and having a special kind of a pretty neat alumni event. We had the Panther Prowl on October, I think it was 8th or 9th, and we had about 1,600 runners and walkers, more than the 1,500 that we had last year, so we exceeded that. We've raised more than $25,000 for scholarships, and this is a certified 5K run-walk, and it's a beautiful course. It's always done at a great time of year, and it's a great type of activity. Later in the month, we had the LGBT Plus Film Festival that we have hosted and co-sponsored for 31 years. And this has prominent filmmakers from around the world who screen their films and really put forth a show that lasts, as I recall, for about 10 days, 22 different films, some from Milwaukee natives, but a lot of great films. So I was able to help open that and screen the first film. And then, about a week and a half ago, went to the Kiwanis Club. The day before, I'd been at the Rotary Club introducing our president of the UW system, Ray Cross, to the Rotary. And the next day, spent some time with the Kiwanis Club, same venue, same location. So that was pretty neat, being able to tell UWM's story. And I mentioned Direct Supply earlier. We're looking at a number of additional partnerships. Their CEO, Bob Hillis, has just done a remarkable job. Their whole leadership team has really helped put Direct Supply on what I consider to be kind of a rocket ship trajectory. They're doing marvelously. And I just filmed another video. Got to watch out for that. Yesterday, I did some Thanksgiving work, doing some Jimmy Fallon imitations this time with those thank you notes. And the Halloween video came out about what was it, last Thursday or Friday or so for the Halloween video. So we have a lot of fun. We've got a great video team. So those are some cool things.
you are involved in such a wide array of things, and it really must give you a great deal of satisfaction that you get to celebrate the highs and as well as deal with some of those challenges too.
Yeah, you got to keep the balance, don't you? You got to keep the balance. For me, that's key, and I know it is for you too, Dave. And you know, family's important. Taking care of ourselves is important. But there's so much variety in these jobs; you just are never bored.
That's for sure. Well, we're out of time. Thank you once again for spending a half hour with us, and we look forward to your next visit next month.
Thank you, Dave. It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to The Chancellor's Report featuring Mark Mone, Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. If you would like more information, go to uwm.edu/chancellor.